don't push away your grief. Don't hide anything. Don't push it down. But allow yourself the benefit of noticing that there is still beauty in the world.
I'm Phil Hatterman, and this is Dog Words, presented by Rosie Fund. Today, I discuss loss, grief, and hope with author Sarah Chauncey. Her book, P.S. I Love You More Than Tuna, is a thoughtful and helpful gift for anyone dealing with the loss of an animal they love, or even in anticipation of that event, if it is an ill or aging pet. Regular listeners know that our dear Peach's Delight only has a few months left with us. Sarah's book has been a great comfort. The adorable illustrations perfectly match the tone of the prose, a letter from Sarah's late cat, Hedda. Use the Amazon Smile link in the description if you are in the United States, and a portion of the proceeds, like all eligible purchases, will help support Rosie Fund. There is also a link for international orders. If you're new to Dog Words, in each episode we explore the world of dog care and companionship. We Save Each Other is the motto of Rosie Fund, which simply means the more we do for dogs, the more they do for us, and they already do a lot. You can support Rosie Fund through donations or by making a purchase through one of the affiliates at rosiefund.org. This helps provide the Rosie Life starter kits that make sure senior and harder to adopt dogs have some of the items they'll need in their forever home. This makes them much more adoptable. Any donation amount is greatly appreciated, but popular levels include $30 to provide a collar and leash for a Rosie Life starter kit dog, and $100 to cover an entire kit. You can also support Rosie Fund by downloading, subscribing, rating, and most importantly, sharing Dog Words. Follow us on social media, including the free Rosie Fund YouTube channel that offers great videos of Rosie, Peaches, and shelter dogs looking for their forever home. Even if you aren't looking for a dog, watching and sharing the videos helps give these dogs much-needed exposure. We welcome your comments, questions, and suggestions, especially if you have an idea for a topic or guest. Go to the podcast page at rosiefund.org to share your thoughts. Please download, follow, rate, and most importantly, share Dog Words. Next time on Dog Words, Kathy O'Dowd and Linda Haney tell us how Church of the Resurrection's pet ministry is helping the greater Kansas City community. The mission of Rosie Fund is to provide humans with the resources and education they need to give senior and harder to adopt dogs a better life. We thank you for joining our mission. Today's guest on Dog Words, all the way from British Columbia, is author Sarah Chauncey. Sarah, welcome to Dog Words.
Thanks so much for having me, Phil.
This is an important discussion that I am only mildly concerned listeners aren't going to anticipate as being dark and sad, but really, from talking to you before we started the interview, this is an uplifting conversation because it's a celebration of this wonderful gift that humans have been given, which is a relationship with, and it seems inadequate to call them pets, but the cats, the dogs, the other animals that share our lives.
Mm.
And part of that sharing is the inevitability that at some point it comes to an end, and coping with that. And You are helping people with that inevitability through your work, and in particular, P.S., I Love You More Than Tuna, a celebration of the human-animal bond. What was the inspiration for that?
In 2016, my 20-year-old cat, Hedda, passed away. And a few days later, I received this lovely sketch from a friend of mine who was a professional illustrator. And he wrote a note that said, it was from Hedda's perspective. And it said, you know, our love will keep you strong going forward. Isn't that what love is about? And then he signed it Hedda. And then he wrote, P.S. I love you more than tuna. And I just was crying. And yet at the same time, I thought, this is really powerful because I felt witnessed by him. And that's something we don't get when we're grieving other species often from the culture, is that recognition of the bond. And somehow all at once, I had this vision of a gift book that could be given to people who were grieving companion animals, or as Francis, the illustrator, calls them, animal friends, which I love, and that it would help people heal through laughter and tears. And it would essentially give us part of what's missing when a companion animal dies, which is that witnessing. Because animals, if nothing else, that's the biggest thing they give us. They are witnesses to our lives, among many other things. And when he gave me that gift, I felt seen, which went a really long way towards healing. And ultimately, you know, isn't that what we want as humans, as beings on this planet, is for people to see us and accept us for who we are? The book is designed to be given as a gift, although people are welcome to buy it for themselves, because sometimes when another person is grieving an animal, we don't know what to say. And it's a way of saying, I know you're hurting. I may not know the right thing to say, but I care about you. And here's something that I think might help.
A nice thing about a book, and just in general, a book over it being an electronic interaction, which we're going to get to that in a moment, that has its place. But that tactile interaction you have with a book, to sit and hold that and move through the pages at your pace when you're ready, because a dear friend can tell you, I understand the pain you're feeling. And if you just want to talk, or you just want my shoulder, I'm here for you. But that might not be on your schedule. You might need that at 2 a.m. or tomorrow when they're at work, or they're not in the same location that you're in.
Right.
But that book is there whenever you need it. And it's also, I just feel so much more personal to get a book from someone.
Yeah. There are now some, I have the same feeling about the word pet, that it's a little diminutive, but it's one syllable. Mm-hmm. There are some pet loss sympathy cards, and I wanted to expand on that and make this an empathy book and really celebrate what these bonds are. And even though the main character in this book is a cat, people who have grieved mostly dogs, but we've also had bunnies, horses, and birds, have found that it's a good metaphor. With cats, it's a little more literal.
Someone who dismisses this as for cat lovers is like, well, I lost my dog. It's not the same. We all understand metaphors.
Yeah.
Most movies you watch are a metaphor. Wait a minute. I don't live in a galaxy a long time ago, far, far away. Right. This movie is not for me.
Right.
I don't have a lightsaber.
Yeah. And I don't mean to make light.
Yeah, but the
your
emotions,
example's funny.
Yeah. But yeah, the emotions that you're feeling, the experiences that you're having, that's how literature works.
Right.
And if P.S. I Love You More Than Tuna helps you understand your grief in a way, or feel witnessed or validated, or helps you process it, it's served a great purpose. And what has been the response to your book from cat lovers and others?
It has been really powerful. You know, it hasn't, I'll say, you know, I don't think there's any author who feels like their book has done as well as they thought it would or should. But what is most heartening to me are the Amazon reviews and the comments people leave, and the sheer number of photos I've seen where people have added the book to their altar, of where they have, you know, a little candle and a photo. And in fact, that's represented in the book, which is kind of cool. It's like a little Mobius strip. Tears, a lot of tears. When you first asked me what has been the response to your book, that was my first thought, was tears, but also laughter. And my aim was to heal through both. I sent the manuscript to quite a few people to read through and tell me what resonated, what didn't. So I was trying to find the lines that really do touch your heart the most. So it's just been really heartening. And it sounds odd to say because it is such a sad time for the individual. And I know that because I went through it 5 years ago. And I hope I don't have to go through it for a good couple of decades now, but you never know. We don't know how long we have.
With the Amazon reviews and the resources that are on the website, which you have several websites, all of which will be linked in the description for this episode, it looks like there's a community that has grown around tuna.
Yes. Part of this was wanting to create a space that wasn't available for me 5 years ago. But also, as an author going with a traditional publisher, I had to build what they call a platform, which is to show the publisher that there's a market for this book. And there's a huge market. In 2016, I started a Facebook page for P.S. I Love You More Than Tuna. And then within that, a group called Tuna Tributes, which I was very careful to make it only about sharing photos and tributes and supporting each other, because I've seen so many groups devolve over politics and drama. So I sort of went, okay, what happens underneath drama? What gives rise to drama? And then created guidelines around that. And we have now, I think it's 2,100 people. It is, I would say the majority are cats, but we've certainly had quite a few people grieving dogs, horses, a rabbit, and I think a couple of birds. And it's just a really wonderful, warm, supportive group of people who get it. And then on Instagram, which is the platform I really like the most because I've been on it, gosh, almost 12 years. On Instagram, I tend to focus more on the pets who are with us now and the mindful kind of really paying deep attention to the animal in your life. So I ask questions. And I think one of the most recent ones was, you know, the animals in your life, past or present, what's their favorite way of keeping warm in the depth of winter? Or what's one of their quirks that makes you laugh? And I always ask past or present. It's not a matter of like one platform is for people who have animals living with them now, and one is for those that have gone. But I try to kind of balance it out by having the tributes group where people can receive support and a place where people can connect more deeply. It's sort of like mindfulness through a paw-shaped lens.
Oh, I love that phrase. Mindfulness through a paw-shaped lens. Also, the encouragement that you give people to recognize what does your dog or cat do to stay warm or what are their quirks is sort of a gateway to mindfulness. Mm-hmm. When Rosie passed, I started a Google Doc of all the little clowny things she did and all the different nicknames we had for her, different activities that she enjoyed. And every time I read that list for the next several weeks, it would trigger another memory to add to the list. Which tells me not everything was top of mind. Some things were buried and needed to be shaken a little bit to find them.
Yeah.
With our dog Peaches, I feel like I've done a much better job of recognizing her as a being, as unique. I'd like to think I recognize every dog is unique, just as every person is unique, but identifying what makes that individual unique is a much more powerful connection than just, I like them, I get along with them, whether it's a person or another creature. And being in the moment and consciously cataloging that, and not as a researcher or sociologist, but as a part of that experience.
Yes.
Sort of a participant observer.
Yes. And taking it into your heart, because those are the moments. Like one question I remember asking was, I was sharing a video of my current cat who jumped about 6 feet to try and get a bug, and she kept falling down and kept jumping up, which made me laugh. And so I said, you know, what's the funniest thing the animal you live with or past or present has ever done. Because those moments, like your document, those become memories. And those moments, when you add them up, that's the relationship.
With the loss of a human loved one, that grief obviously is very profound. But I feel like it hits me even harder when it's a non-human.
Mm-hmm.
I have theories on why that grief can be so profound, but have you learned anything from people's reaction to the book? Why that seems to hit us so hard with a pet?
Well, the whole book is about why it's hard, except not about, because it's an illustrated book. It's written very simply so that even grief brains can absorb it, because you know that feeling of brain fog with grief. I just want to start by saying I have experienced a lot of human loss in my life too, and they're just all different. My mother died when I was a child, when I was 9, and I worked a lot in the 1980s AIDS epidemic in Washington, D.C. I've had human loss, yet animals are witnesses to our lives. And as I was saying, you know, when I talked about Francis's gift, being seen is really what we want as beings on this planet, human or otherwise. And with other humans, it gets messy. We use language and people make up stories. And then we have, you know, politics and passive aggression and all this other stuff. And animals are just there in the moment, witnessing us. They see us at our most private, at our most vulnerable. You know, the ugly cries we might not even dare show our spouse, you know. I think when you take language out of the equation, the bond becomes something that's, it's going to sound paradoxical, but in my experience, it's not. It becomes very simple and very deep.
And simple and deep are not mutually exclusive.
No, in my experience, there's certainly simplicity that is shallow, sure. Mm-hmm. But when you can get to the real depth of being two beings on this planet, witnessing each other, caring for each other in our species specific ways over the course of hopefully 20 years, maybe more, maybe not. And then the just the depth of that, it's impossible to explain in words. It has to be experienced, but it's really profound. And not only does it draw us closer to the animal while they're alive, it deepens our bond with them during their lifetime and ours. It also, after their body is gone, it teaches us, as we were talking about mindfulness, to pay attention to other things. Going deep isn't just for animals. And then when we get to the end of their life, in my experience with Hedda, I was sad. Yeah, I was really sad, but I wasn't making up stories like this shouldn't be happening. And often I find, again, in my experience in life, often the pain of a situation comes down to whether or not I'm resisting it, you know, really resisting it. And of course, I want the animals I love to be with me as long as they possibly can be. But nature has central organizing principles, and we are all species, are expressions of nature. And one of those principles is that everything that is born eventually dies. And it's a really, really hard truth to accept. But when I was able to make that shift and recognize, you know what, she's not going to be here forever. Then one of the things in our culture is we humans put a lot of value on things that are scarce. And I think we're culturally conditioned to do that. Some of that might be a hunter-gatherer thing. Well, with animals, our time together is scarce. And if we know going in when we adopt an animal that we hopefully are going to have 15, 20 years, but we might not, then every moment becomes more valuable. And that was Hedda's biggest gift to me, was recognizing that every moment is valuable.
Without diminishing how special Rosie is to me and Hedda to you, everything you've described about how we're reacting to that, that we're losing this witness, and when we talk about it being a nonverbal witness to our lives, it's implied it's also not a judgmental witness. Mm. And so to have that non-judgmental, unconditional affection from something else be taken away, it's not just grief. It's grief and perhaps fear that is gone forever and you will never find that same connection.
Yeah.
But to reframe it as that you had it for whatever amount of time you had, that you had those moments, that you were completely committed to being in the now and getting the most of what you could, or not getting the most of what you could, but accepting what they were giving in its entirety.
Yes.
With people, while you miss a close relationship that ends, whether it's a relative or a loved one, a friend, there are so many opportunities to let them know what they've meant to you. And right. You'll miss them when they're gone, and you won't take for granted what you shared with them. For me, I missed Rosie so much, and I had this fear that maybe she didn't know that.
Oh, yeah.
Because how could she?
Yeah. You know, my way of coping with almost anything is to write it out, because I'm a professional writer. And in the few days after Hedda died, I so desperately wanted to know that she felt I'd given her a good life, which sounds kind of analogous to what you were experiencing with Rosie. I mean, it's not quite the same. I get what you're saying. But there is that, just that desire of like, did they know? Did they know? And did I do okay? Were they happy? Did I do a good job? And in some ways, that's where Tuna came from. Because that's, without getting into spoilers, that's what it is a cat or an animal celebrating the moments of its life and beyond.
For me, I do writing and media production. Writing that list was helpful, but also I made many videos using both the video footage and the still photography we had of Rosie to make videos with, unfortunately, music that I didn't license, so I can't really share them the way I would like to. But thank you very much to Queen, Mark Knopfler, Jake Shimabukuro, Pete Townsend. these are the artists whose music I use. But seeing her in those videos, to me, was confirmation that she knew.
Yeah.
I could see her behavior. I could see in her eyes. I could see how she evolved in her time with us. That evolution of trusting us, the way she would interact with us, and that she knew that it was okay.
Yeah. Yeah. I have a very close friend. He and his husband have had 3 chocolate labs. And in fact, the first was my first experience as an adult of what someone goes through when an animal dies, because it was long before my first cat died. And he then, about 5 years ago, he's in his 50s, great shape, had a massive heart attack, just barely made it, was in open heart surgery for a long time, and they put in 11 stents. He was in and out of consciousness. And he said that at one point, he just looked up and all he could see were dogs and puppies. And he thought, if this is my afterlife, I'm okay with that. When he kind of came out of the surgery, they said that they had almost lost him a couple of times. And so I like to think that that was his thing. And I just found that so heartwarming. I don't know about visually seeing, but I feel my cat around me. Mm-hmm. her body's gone, but what made her her isn't, if that makes sense.
It does.
And anyway, James' story always just makes me feel really reassured. I mean, I'm not a big Rainbow Bridge person. that's, you know, I think it's really helpful for a lot of people, but it never resonated with me as deeply as it does other people. So when he said that, it was like, oh, wow, cool.
And if our body is but a vessel, why would that only apply to us?
Exactly.
What kind of narcissism is it?
Exactly.
It's, that thinks we are the only species.
And I think they're special. Kind of waiting for us to figure it out. Mm-hmm. They're kind of like, okay, yeah. These humans, boy, they got issues. But we can work with them.
We're blessed that they are that patient.
Yes.
That they're willing to wait for us to catch up with them.
Yeah. I mean, that gets back to the core of what they give us. There's a wonderful book illustrated by Patrick McDonald, who draws dogs. And the text is by Eckhart Tolle, and it's called Guardians of Being. And it's just about how cats and dogs can teach us to really be in the moment. Because for humans, we're out here, we're out in front of our heads, we're to the left, to the right. We very rarely come back to just this moment. And being able to do that is what allowed me to kind of write Tuna and grieve Hedda.
Maybe it's because of COVID lockdown. People are more introspective. But a few months ago, our guest was Kansas City weather forecaster, local icon. I think he blushes every time I call him local icon, Gary Lezak.
And we sounds like the kind of city where that would happen.
Where you live in the Midwest, a weather forecaster is a big deal. That's yeah. important. That's yes. like being a Kardashian in LA.
It's true.
That's how important you are to the local economy.
Influencer.
Yes.
That's an influencer. Yeah.
But Gary and I talked about how dogs, especially, are always in the now.
Yeah.
And if you can be in the now with your dog, that is such a gift from them. And we could all learn from that. So that was a couple months ago. And when we talk about something on Dog Words where I reference a previous guest or episode, I will link that in the description. Yeah. Hey, we just talked about Gary Lezak. If you'd like to listen to the whole thing, here's a link in the description. I think I have linked him in almost every episode since.
Wow. Yeah.
Because this keeps coming up. It's a combination of, one, it's so important. Mm-hmm. And two, I think there's a heightened awareness of we're being forced to slow down.
Yep.
Without de-stressing. We're slowing down, but I think people are more stressed. Typically, you slow down and then the stress melts away. You know, you're on a beach in the Caribbean, you're slowing down and the stress melts away. If you were slowing down,
there's no chance of like killing anybody accidentally. Right.
So now we're slowing down, but there's all this stress about will we ever be able to speed up? Will we ever be able to move about the way we used to? And will the economy function in the same way? And you're just worried about everything. But you're spending more time with your dog and realizing, oh, I can slow down and I can be in this moment. And whatever I need to worry about, maybe it'll still be there or maybe it won't. When I come out of this moment, it doesn't matter.
Exactly. Yes.
And we're being forced to confront that. So maybe that part of it is a good thing.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I guess maybe.
Because if
I
don't learn anything from
we have
being
to learn
locked
something.
Down.
Yes. And we're
makes
getting
it even more tragic.
It does.
It's tragic enough, but if it's tragic and we learn nothing from it.
Then what's the point? Yeah. And I am a firm believer. Maybe it's, you know, I also think we all experience things differently. But to me, finding meaning is really important. And it's the slowing down. One of the things I say often is that we can't extend their lives any longer than veterinary medicine allows right now. But we can go deeper. We can really see them as beings without all the stories we've projected onto them of like, oh, cute little puppy. Like, you know, these beings aren't our stories about them. You know, they may recognize their names, but they probably don't really care that we've named them. Mm-hmm. I believe they're here for their own purposes and that it's interconnected with ours as humans.
If all of your needs are being met, or not even all of your needs, your basic needs that you have, food, clothing, shelter, mm-hmm. and a meaningful relationship, and now you're going to have a meal, and you're not starving, but it's right. an opportunity to have a good meal, would you rather have all you could eat buffet, or would you rather have the most delectably prepared meal? It's just a small bite. It's an amuse-bouche mm-hmm. of something that's just going to transport you, just a sublime tasting experience.
Yes.
And that's the going deep with your dog. Mm-hmm. Would you just like to extend their life indefinitely through the wonders of medicine, but them not really living a life?
Or knowing them?
Yeah. Or give them the best life they can, give them the best moments,
yes.
and have each of yes. those moments be the best.
Yes. Just like every dog is the best. Mm-hmm. Every moment is the best. And if you can stay in the moment with your dog, you can probably find the joy that they're feeling. Mm-hmm. Because it's such, like, we don't even realize how heavy a weight comes over us from thinking about the future and all the worrying we do. And only a tiny fraction of it is really necessary. Like yes. a lot of it is just kind of like, no offense to hamsters, but it's a hamster wheel. Mm-hmm. You know? I'm sure hamsters have their own reason for incarnation too.
Yeah. It's not until that weight is removed. Like that when you go on vacation and you're yes. schlepping all of your luggage.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And then you get to the hotel and you start walking around without luggage back to that Caribbean beach laying right. there. It's like, and I didn't have to drag my carry-on down to yes. the beach with me.
Yes, it's that expansiveness. Yeah. You know, my sister often says, the bummer about life is we never get to see how it all turns out. That's kind of how I feel. It's like, I'm so curious about what this life is and what these beings are that we coo over and that give us so much joy and teach us so much. You know, it's like, will we ever actually know? And maybe not knowing is the point, is kind of lean into the mystery of it.
And would knowing ruin it?
Yes. Well, I mean, that's another thing I say is you have a question that I love talking about this, about why grieving an animal can be so much harder than grieving a person. And my kind of running joke is that it's because the bond is nonverbal. Like if they could speak to us, it might not be so great, but you know, they witness us, because another human assumption is that, well, language, I'm saying these words and you should understand what I mean. Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, we've all got our own filter on the world, and words are sophisticated grunts. They're sounds we make with our mouth.
And how often do words actually confuse the issue, because you're yes. trying to assign meaning instead of just sharing the moment, sharing the experience, and words need not be spoken.
Yes. And in fact, without words, it can be so much deeper. That's my experience. Like, it sounds counterintuitive because we really love complexity. As, you know, Homo sapiens in the 21st century think complexity is like the thing. And in my experience, when you're able to drop all those labels and just see this being for who they are, that's like mind-blowing.
There's enough complexity that we have to process just to survive in the modern world.
Yes. Yeah.
Why add more superfluous complexity if it's not necessary? Yeah. There's a great TED talk And if I can find it, I will link it in the description for the episode so everyone can check it out. The speaker is explaining that when our species was hunter-gatherers, there were about, and if I'm off with the numbers, I'm not off by very much, 250 to 300 things you needed to know.
Mm-hmm.
If you go on Amazon, there are literally a million choices.
54 million.
Yeah.
Books. Yeah.
So
I just recently found that number. That's why I don't mean to correct you.
And I don't even think Amazon was the example he used. I think he used the example of just going into a Walmart.
Oh, God, yeah.
So if you transported a hunter-gatherer from 10,000 years ago into a Walmart and said, here are your choices, and you have to pick the best item for your food, your skincare, your clothing, your everything, your deodorant, and make all of those decisions, psychically overwhelming that they would not be able to cope. Our brains haven't changed that much in 10,000 years.
Yeah.
And yet we're still trying to understand being inside a Walmart, being inside a virtual shopping space in Amazon. And right. That's just our shopping. Forget about your jobs, transportation, communication, your streaming choices online for television or any other entertainment. You need to be pruning back your options, not adding them. You need to be simplifying, not complicating, because it seems like there's things you can't control that have to be complicated.
Right.
Maybe they don't. But even if you concede that they are, it's even more important to be looking for, how can I simplify my relationship with my dog?
Yes.
Because I'm pretty sure that's what the dog wants.
Yes. She doesn't need like 25,000 toys. You know, she wants your attention and your love.
And that moment.
Yes.
She doesn't want to hear about what are our plans for tomorrow.
Right. Yes. I love that.
So what are we doing now?
This is going to sound cheesy, but I don't mean it in a cheesy way. Animals process information with their hearts for the most part. I mean, yes, aside from like stalking behavior and hunting, they don't think things through as much as we do because they live in the moment and there's a new moment and a new moment and a new moment. Who has time to think? And that's such a joy. It can bring us joy.
Even if we think we personally are genuine and transparent and altruistic, until we really get to know someone, may not give them the benefit of the doubt that we think they're being transactional. What can they get from us?
Right.
Animals, right. Even though we feed them, whatever affection they're showing is not self-serving. It's genuine.
Exactly. Except maybe rolling over on their backs for a belly rub.
Yeah.
That might be self-serving. But no, it's absolutely genuine and 100%. And there are lots of people who make jokes about cats being judgmental, but dogs have domesticated themselves in ways that allow us to recognize their expressions more easily. The difference with cat is that cats aren't fully domestic yet.
Mm-hmm. You talk about being a writer and writing helping you process what you were feeling. You're also a writing coach.
Yes.
So you understand the writing process better than most.
For better or worse.
That could be a curse.
Right.
As a writing coach, what advice do you give to others for whether it's writing to process grief or just to problem solve, or if people feel like they have a story to tell? I guess what I'm getting at, do people always understand why they want to write? And I'm going to throw out an analogy for you.
Okay.
There are a lot of people who want to create a website because they see websites can make money, but they don't know what service they want to sell or product they want to sell, or they're not a web developer or programmer. They just, I want to get on the website train. So are there people who want to write but don't know why, or maybe they're writing for the wrong reason, or maybe writing isn't the way they should be expressing what they want to express? They just don't know any different.
Well, there's a difference between obviously writing for yourself and writing for someone else. And I usually work with nonfiction writers. So that's people who are writing memoir or writing about nature or any kind of what I call narrative nonfiction book, a book that tells a story, but it may be a story about a concept or it may be an individual story. And yes, to answer your question, I often see manuscripts and people don't really know why they're writing it. And often as an editor, I can come in and look at it and understand what it is that drove them to write it. And I don't know why I'm able to do that. I think it may just be having been in this field for 30 years, off and on. I had a client a couple of weeks ago ask me what my favorite qualities were in my own clients. And I said, self-awareness, because it's very hard to read someone's memoir when their pain is clear, but they're not seeing the situation clearly. And, you know, it's not my place to point that out to them. I really recommend, and this is something I've learned from a podcast called The Cure for Chronic Pain by a woman named Nicole Sachs. And this was actually for chronic migraine I started, but it's expressive writing, which is sitting down and letting your heart pour through your hand. And I find it better to use a physical, like pen and paper, but you can use a laptop or whatever you want. You could verbally vent, but it's just getting the emotions out, because when they get stuck inside us, that's when they can turn into illness, they can turn into all kinds of things, and it's just not comfortable. So that's expressive writing, which has nothing to do with narrative writing. I coach narrative writing. But in narrative writing, I do tell people, you know, your first draft is for you to figure out what it is you want to say with this book. It's all for you. Everything after the first draft is about making it readable for the reader.
But you have to have that starting point.
Right. Mm-hmm. And just better out than in. So this is how I see it. The tendency to hold emotions in my experience, is a holdover of classism, because upper middle class and wealthy white people didn't want to be showing their emotions. And it's just ridiculous. And it's time we all realized that the ways we were conditioned are exactly sort of what's perpetuating divides, and maybe focus more on learning to see our conditioning and be able to go, oh, you know what? That's what I was taught. But yeah, that really doesn't fit the world right now. So maybe that's something.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly.
We've talked a lot about how people cope with the loss of a pet. Is there something that you've learned that should be done or could be done just in anticipation, as either a pet is getting old or has an illness, that will prepare us for that, so that, not that we shouldn't grieve fully, but that maybe we have a more healthy grieving?
Yeah. So that time when you know the end is coming, or even when it's a potential end, let's say a cancer diagnosis and you don't know the prognosis, that's a time of great uncertainty. And it's a really, for me, that was actually even harder than the loss itself, was the, you know, the prepare yourself mm-hmm. moment, because there is no way to fully prepare yourself. So this is called anticipatory grief, and it's actually a really fertile time when you can do a lot of healing. I was going to say work, but it's not work. Basically, you can make grief a lot easier on yourself if you start working with it, well, from the very beginning of when you adopt, but also when things begin accelerating, when the body begins breaking down. There's psychologist William Worden has something called the four tasks of mourning, which is, to me, a much more resonant grief framework than, you know, Elizabeth Kubler-Ross's five stages. They're not linear, and they're just things that we need to do after a pet dies. And the first task of grieving is to accept the reality of the impending loss. And that's a big acceptance. If you can do that, this is the best advice I got in that kind of twilight time, was a vet tech told me, take time to let your heart catch up to your decision or to catch up to the situation. And that transformed everything because I focused entirely on, okay, this is happening. And it wasn't what I wanted to feel. And I wanted to run away and I wanted to pretend it wasn't happening. But to be there for this sacred transition was really powerful. What I recommend when you're in that situation is to stay in the present moment as much as possible by, you know, focus on the sights. What can you see? What do you smell? What sounds are around you? Or, you know, maybe put your hand on her back and feel her fur. That's another important thing. Try, even when a vet has said the prognosis is poor, try to remember that in this moment, just this moment, your dog's still there. And give him a belly rub. Talk to her about your favorite memories. You know, thank them. Tell them. You know, I don't think dogs necessarily understand human mouth sounds beyond the words they know. But I do believe they're champions at reading energy.
Absolutely.
And they'll get it.
Yes.
Yeah. The taking your time, often there isn't a clear cut unless, you know, your dog is really in severe pain and it's very urgent and nothing can be done. Usually there's a window of a couple of days. I mean, check with your vet, but do take that time to try and come to terms with it, to have whatever closure you can have by saying goodbye. And a lot of people do this with the best last day, which I love. I mean, you know, I didn't love it until I went through it. And then I thought, this is beautiful. This is perfect. So when you're giving your dog a best last day, make it a ritual for you too. And while they're still alive, this is a little bit backwards. Let's say you have to do treatment, you have to give them medication, or with cats sometimes, and probably dogs too, subcutaneous fluids. Talk to them during that time. Say, I'm doing this to make you more comfortable. And just keep talking to them. Make that a special time as opposed to, oh God, it's medication time again.
A thought I have on best last day, when you said it's for you too, not just for your beloved pet. You also said, while they may not understand our words, they're masters at reading our energy.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not insensitive or callous for you to be enjoying that best day.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
you should
can
be
feel
enjoying
all the
it
feels.
Because that's the energy they're getting from you.
Right. I mean,
so
I think it is
there's
normal.
Nothing wrong with you celebrating with them and having fun and laughing.
Yes.
And if there's some tears in that, that's to be expected.
Yeah.
But having fun with them, that's the day you want to give them.
Yes. Yes. And the day you want to remember.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Because they're not thinking about what's coming next.
Yes. Don't add stress. Don't give them stress.
Yeah.
Trying to figure out, why are you so sad?
Right.
I'm getting to eat all the cheeseburgers I want. This shouldn't be sad.
And peanut butter. Yeah.
Whether you're able to anticipate the inevitable with your pet as far as the timing that, you know, you only have a few days and we need to have our best last day now, or even if it's completely unexpected, once it happens, then the grieving process, no matter what you've done in anticipation, or even if you've done nothing in anticipation, is going to hit hard. And the mental toll, the emotional toll that that takes in those moments, it can be hard to know, how do I grieve in a way that's going to move me forward, that's going to get me past this, and not just take me on an endless spiral down? What is a healthy way to face that grief?
It's so hard. There's a beautiful quote by a writer named Jamie Anderson. And the quote is, "Grief is love with no place to go."
Oh.
Isn't that beautiful?
Yes.
And if we can recognize that grief and love are two sides of the same coin, that can kind of lighten the heaviness a little bit. You're just feeling love, and the object isn't there of the love, but that love still exists and should be honored. I am a firm believer that however you need to grieve, that's the right way for you. One of my sisters, the day her dog was euthanized, she put everything away. And I couldn't, you know, for me, that really shocked me. I have another sister who left things out for a year after her dog died. I think it's a really personal decision. Be careful who you talk to, because not everybody does get it. And this is a really important time to have compassion for yourself and to surround yourself with people who get it. And, you know, just like you'd block someone online, just mute someone. If someone's being dismissive, just mute them in real life for a few months or however long you need. I like to tell people to imagine themselves or their grief as a puppy and feel the warmth. The minute I say the word puppy, I'm filled with this warmth, yes, right? Yeah. The minute you hear the word, you're like, oh, puppy. You know, just try and extend that to yourself and to your grief. It's tender and it needs compassion. I highly recommend getting out for walks in nature for two reasons. One is it physically moves energy through the body. And that's really important because we need to get that energy out. And it also allows us to notice there are other expressions of nature. There's a juxtaposition with grief in my experience that there's there's still a world out here. There's still life out here. And how dare there be a world out here? And how dare there be life out here when I'm in pain?
I think that was a very important step that my wife and I took, because we gave Rosie daily walks. Mm-hmm. But after she passed, we still took our walks and took her tags with us.
Oh, I love that. I love that. Yeah.
And we still take her tags with us when we go on vacation.
Oh, I love that. That's awesome.
So we have pictures of her tags getting to go all around the world.
Fulfilling her bucket list.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. And I certainly feel Hedda around me. So, you know, I think it's highly likely that there was a part of Rosie has been enjoying these trips with you, just not a part that you can touch or feel.
I do not doubt that at all.
One of the two more things I recommend for people. One is a phrase from a Buddhist neuroscience teacher named Rick Hansen. He calls it taking in the good. I love that phrasing, because even if you're crying, even if you're in deep pain, we all still have the ability to appreciate, let's say, a beautiful sunset or the first blossom in spring or a baby's laugh. Or someone else's puppy, you know, whatever is the good to you, whatever feels positive to you. Don't push away your grief. Don't hide anything. Don't push it down. But allow yourself the benefit of noticing that there is still beauty in the world. Because life and death are constant. We notice it when it's near to us, But I mean, just take a look at the news or walk through a forest, and it's happening everywhere all the time. But for our own sanity, we only pay attention when it affects us personally. So just try to allow yourself everything, which is easier said than done. And the other thing is, if you feel called to it, volunteer with a rescue. You know, SPCA usually needs dog walkers. And you can allow yourself to be around people who really do get it. Because people in rescue, as you know, are the champions of the animal world.
That was also invaluable for us, is spending time with more dogs.
Mm.
And you don't feel guilty about it. It's not like your spouse passed away and
you're on Tinder.
You leave the memorial like scanning through your Tinder.
Right.
Like, well, okay, what's next?
Yeah.
Who's up? But with the dogs, it's such a community with both the volunteers, the staff at a shelter, but just what the dogs are able to give to you. And I know this is true for my wife, Dawn, as well. You spend so much time taking them on a walk and then maybe just sitting in the grass or on a bench.
Yeah.
With them. And it's not because you're going to take them home.
Right.
They're not expecting you to take them home. So it's not like you're leading them on.
Right.
Because they're just enjoying that moment too, that you're giving to each other.
It's great. And even if you don't, so I'm going to play devil's advocate here for people who feel like it's just too painful. There are so many ways you can volunteer. As a writer, I wrote my local rescue's newsletter for a couple of years. And, you know, if you're a lawyer, you can offer free legal advice. There's so many different ways.
We had a rescue group on a while back that was sharing, we would love to have somebody come mow our lawn.
Yes, that would be great. Yeah, exactly. I mean, I have a friend who knits blankets for animals in foster care. And it's not just a cute thing. When a cat or puppy is in foster care, they are creating a colony scent with their litter mates and their human foster. And that's how animals kind of navigate, especially cats, but I think dogs do it too. So that blanket comes with them into the adopted home, and they have something familiar and comfortable that smells comfortable, because animals focus based on scent way more than we do. I mean, like, if scent were considered like you could be a genius, we would be like just so dumb. Humans would be.
I shared this story when it happened, and I think I've shared it on the podcast one other time since then. But we had dog trainer Eric Gilbert on because we found him when a video popped up in my YouTube feed of Peaches. Like, that's our dog, Peaches. And it was him with Peaches and some other dogs when she first was in the shelter.
Oh.
And when it popped up, I was like, oh, Peaches, our dog is named Peaches. And you're watching the video, like, that's not just a dog named Peaches. That's our dog named Peaches. And you could see her personality of her being bossy, and they were using her as a tester dog to see how socialized new dogs in the shelters were, because she would read them faster than any trainer could. And based on her reaction, you could tell how socialized they were, because she would not put up with nonsense.
Brilliant.
And it's like, well, that's Peaches. So of course we had to have him on. So he shows up at my house to do the interview in our home studio. And she's at the door reacting the way she always does, which is a bark of, hey, I don't know you.
Right.
The same way she does if somebody shows up to work on my furnace.
Yes.
And then we do the same thing that we do with the furnace guy, which is we open the door once we've told them this is what we're going to do. Mm-hmm. And she goes out and sniffs them. And then, okay, you can come in. So what she does with the furnace guy or someone new she's met is she will either come in and just kind of sniff them and try to get to know them better. Or it's like, okay, I don't need anything else from you. I'll go off. Or she'll go get one of her toys and bring it to them. So You just wait, Sarah. It gets better. So she steps out and she sniffs Eric, and her tail starts wagging and a little more enthusiastically than she does with the furnace guy that she's just met. And you think, okay, well, maybe she recognizes him, or she's just in a good mood because she'll wag her tail when she's sniffing. If the furnace guy, and I keep using the furnace guy, but there's other people who come to our house. We don't just have like the worst furnace in the world, but there's a furnace guy who comes by every week. Maybe we should get a new furnace. But she'll wag her tail if she smells a dog on them. They'll say, oh, I have a dog. And then she's like sniffing a little more enthusiastically. So anyway, she sniffs.
And she's probably reading your reaction to Eric and the furnace guy too.
But I'm just watching to see how this goes. And she sniffs and it's like, okay, he can come in. Okay, good. Maybe she remembers him. She is a non-submissive dog. It's not just to say that she's a dominant dog. She is non-submissive. She gets chiropractic and massage treatments regularly. They can't get her on her back because she will not show her belly. She will fight them. In fact, the chiropractor sometimes will have the massage therapist work on her a little bit and kind of trick her into kind of melting
rolling
onto her
over.
Back so that they can work on her. And it's like, I need this angle.
Right. She's
and she will not give her belly to us. If she's scratching her back and you touch her belly, oftentimes she will flip over like, what are you doing?
Right. Yeah.
If she's at a dog park and she's scratching her back and a dog thinks, oh, Peaches is showing her belly, and they come over. Boy, she flips over and gives them a look.
Oh, wow.
She leads Eric in, and in the middle of our living room, rolls over and is not scratching her back. It's, here's my belly.
Oh, wow.
She smelled him, led him into our house, and said, hey, old friend, where have you been?
Wow.
Here's my belly.
That makes me feel good because a lot of dogs that I see on the waterfront drop and roll over when I pet them. So that makes me feel really good.
So yeah, they're very trusting, very submissive. But so when you say smell is so important to them.
Yes.
Absolutely. Once she smelled him, it was immediately, oh, hey, come inside, buddy. I got a belly waiting for you.
Aww. That's so sweet.
Well, I want our listeners to know that they can go to Amazon Smile to get your book if they're in the United States. If you're outside the United States, there's going to be a link in the description to Sarah's website, morethantuna.com. And beyond the book, there's the whole community around More Than Tuna, but also links to livingthemess.com and sarahchauncey.com. Because there's so much more that Sarah has to offer than just, she's more than tuna.
Well, the book is available in almost every Amazon and most indie bookstores, as well as the big chains.
I've met so many wonderful people doing the Dog Words podcast. And Sarah's one of a handful of guests that even if I were not sharing this podcast with the world, I would be so grateful for the conversation. I've enjoyed this tremendously, Sarah.
I have really enjoyed this conversation too. You know, you were talking about Peaches recognizing Eric, and I have that feeling of like, hey, I know this guy. I just felt a really strong connection with you. So thank you for having me. And I'm really glad we met.
I look forward to having you back on Dog Words. And it cannot happen too soon, Sarah. Thank you for sharing your time with us today.
Thank you.
I'm Phil Hatterman, and you've been listening to Dog Words, presented by Rosie Fund. Thank you so much to Sarah Chauncey for joining us today. Links to order P.S. I Love You More Than Tuna are in the description, as well as a list of Sarah's websites. There are also links to the interviews discussed in today's episode. I referenced a TED Talk when we were discussing the challenge of handling the complexities of modern life. My paraphrasing of the presentation's content was slightly off, but generally accurate. Most importantly, it supports the point I was making. I encourage everyone to check out Ted Harford's talk using the link in the description. Next time on Dog Words, Kathy O'Dowd and Linda Haney join us from Church of the Resurrection's Pet Ministry. A big thank you to alternative string duo The Wires, featuring cellist Sasha Groshong and violinist Laurel Morgan Parks, for playing the wonderful music you've heard on today's and previous episodes of Dog Words. Supporting The Wires supports our mission, Learn more about The Wires, including their concert schedule, at thewires.info and download their music on iTunes. Check out fiddlelife.com and learn to play fiddle and cello fiddle online from Laurel and Sasha, even if you've never played before. Don't forget to join Laurel and Sasha as they explore new music and delve into the inspiration behind each work as hosts of Sound Currents on 91.9 Classical KC. Click on the Sound Currents link in the description for more information. Go to rosyfun.org to shop and get links to our social media. As always, please download, follow, rate, and share Dogwords. This helps us with sponsorships, then RosyFund can help more dogs. Send us your comments, questions, and suggestions at rosyfun.org and let us know if you would like to be a sponsor or a guest of the Dogwords podcast. Thank you for listening to Dogwords, and remember, we save each other.